Welcome to Starter Pack by Beaver Sounds. I'm Maisie Adair. Here we speak to Laura Goddard, who is the newly elected Community and Welfare Officer within the Student Union. We discuss London life, accessing counselling, sexual harassment, and how to craft the life you'd like to have at LSE. So going into your first year is quite a stressful time. What would you say are the things that you wish you'd known going into first year?
Yeah, that's such a good question. For some context, I spent my whole life in a very, very rural village in Wiltshire. So the nearest like small town was 7 miles away. The nearest shop was 7 miles away. Like,
wow, that's
rural. I'm talking rural. So coming to London was like a huge, huge sort of shock for me. And I think I probably thought I could handle it more than the reality was. But that's probably a similar case for everyone. That's not to say that I didn't love my time and I love London. But certainly there's some things that I wish I knew. So I think stuff like the basics are really important. Like, I really recommend the app City Mapper. That saved my life. And I know there'll be people that say Google Maps is better, but they are just wrong.
City Mapper is amazing. I'm a Londoner. I can confirm.
If you don't know what it is, it's like an app that will, if you kind of put your start place and where you want to go, it will help you find like the quickest bus route, the like quickest tube route, or how long it takes to walk. And it kind of gives you like live updates on which tubes are closed and whatever.
Yeah, it tells you the times that everything's going to arrive, what time you'll be there by, the traffic.
Yeah, it's so good. It sounds so boring, but actually I could kind of get...
It's saved my life so many times.
And this is not sponsored.
Yeah, we're not sponsored.
Yeah, really cool. And I think things like night tube are really cool. Like, certain lines have the night tube where they're open, or through like the early hours in the morning on like Fridays and Saturdays. They're really good to know if you're planning on kind of like staying out late. I think a really important thing to kind of emphasize, and I wish I'd done it a bit more, was, you know, if it takes a little bit, like a couple of extra quid, or you know, like 10 minutes more to kind of go a safer way home, just do it. I feel like there's so many times when I thought, oh, do you know, I just walk that when I probably shouldn't have. And you don't have your wits about you. It's just, you know, there's nothing more valuable than your safety. So if it means £2.40,
that's so true. Sorry.
I'm gonna be such a mum here and I don't care.
No, but I'm always the mum. I'm always the mum, and everyone's like, oh, for God's sake, loosen up. And I think, no, don't loosen up, because there is nothing more valuable than your safety.
Exactly. £2.40, getting home safe. Or the bus is amazing. They run like all the other night. Just do it, because it's good and safe. I think kind of like studying wise, coming to London, there are some really cool like study spaces that aren't at LSE. Like, obviously LSE has the main library. It has like lots of kind of study areas kind of dotted around, like the student saloon, which is kind of weird. I've never been there, but
I didn't know what it was, honestly. Two weeks before we went into lockdown, I found out what the student saloon was. I thought it was a bar. It was a proper bar, or I thought it was where you got your haircut. I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that was the second thing that I mentioned after the LSE library. It just kind of popped into my head. I feel like we're just gonna ignore that one. This is like the NAB, the New Academic Building, which is opposite Lincolnton Fields. That's got like desks and like seating that you can study at. But kind of like external non-LSE places are like Senate House, which is a University of London library. So you can study there for free, but you just have to go there to get your card. And it's such a like cool, old, like mysterious building, and really nice library in there. Very quiet if you kind of like that sort of...
Yeah, there's loads of films filmed there. Yeah, it's such an iconic building.
It is iconic. Including The Bodyguard, that was filmed there.
Oh, there we go.
And also I used to study, because I went to Connaught Hall, which was an intercollegiate. So we were like 5 minutes from UCL. So I used to study at the UCL libraries, because you can just swap your cards in. And SOAS Library, which is so pretty. I feel like SOAS is a bit under the radar, but that library is really cool. And really like that library. So kind of like, if you're close to other uni libraries, check if you can study there, because most of the sort of big London unis, you can. Other spaces at LSE are like the Centre Building, which is this really cool new building, where you can study. Like I'm in the IR department, so we were right at the top, and we had such cool study spaces over like the skyline view of London, which is really cool.
Wow. Worked out how you actually get up to the top floor.
You just have to get the lift, which is kind of past the big staircase that goes down.
Right.
It's really hidden away. But if you just find the lifts, you can go up to the floors.
I really need to do it because the views look amazing.
Yeah, they're cool. If you go to the very top where Manoush resides, there's a little balcony there, which is probably like the highest view. It's really cool.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's one thing LSE has that is just insane. You can find yourself in the most beautiful windows.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, this could be Victorian times.
I think as well, like, tips for incoming students, I think use the SU as much as you can. Obviously this year is going to look differently, but the SU is open from 21st, and so you've got really cool things. Like, there's a cafe on the first floor, so you can get like meals and drinks there. There's a gym, which is really cool, that's open this year, but obviously like more strict measures for COVID. The sixth floor isn't going to be a cafe this year because of COVID, but that will all just be now like tables where you can study and like your lunch with friends and stuff. So
wow.
And there are some really good events for welcome coming up. So we're still doing active lifestyle. That's going to be both in person and on Zoom, so you can still do active lifestyle in person if you book a ticket.
So that's the classes, isn't it?
Yeah,
exercise classes.
Yeah, like Zumba, yoga.
I did a few. It's very fun.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, there's loads of events on, and the SU staff have put in so much effort to make this a really like fun, inclusive few weeks for you guys. So check out the there's like a specific LSE SU welcome mini site where you can check out the events. It's like a calendar.
So you're getting a student loan for the first time. Yeah. It's very exciting when you see all that money go into your bank account. I'm not gonna lie, it really is. But a massive thing I've had to learn is budgeting and keeping track of things. I'm lucky I have a part-time job, so you know, I get extra income doing that. I know that a massive issue for a lot of students is money and how they handle it and what they do with it and how they learn to manage it. So any words of wisdom?
I mean, I'm definitely not the budgeting queen, and there were times in uni when I was really caught out by reckless spending. I will just say now, hopefully Hare Krishna lunches will be running, because for those of you who don't know, this wonderful man comes along with like 7 barrels of curry every day, and you can get your free lunch there. You can donate as well. But that guy literally kept me fed and alive for probably most of second year. Anyway, but yeah, budgeting is it's tough. Like, I think you come into uni and you haven't sort of been exposed to the certain things that you are exposed to before, and that can mean that, you know, your finances kind of suddenly seem like this really kind of scary thing. I think getting it right is hard, and it's hard to budget for things that you can't prepare for as well.
But isn't there the Student Advice Center? Do they help with this stuff?
You know, these guys they're amazing, the guys that run the advice center, and they basically give confidential, free, impartial advice on any matter, so academic, personal, housing. What they can really help with is if you're in a place of hardship, they're really great at helping you through those kind of situations. The SU has a hardship fund, which is really important, and I hope everyone kind of hears about it, because if you find yourself in an unexpected period of hardship financially, whatever that might be for, we have a fund where you can apply for it, and you can get sort of emergency on the day funding if you need, and they also do awards for larger sums as well. So, you know, if you find yourself in sort of like really hard financial situation, know that there is sort of help available. And our advisors won't just like talk about money with you. They'll sort of help you work through any like sort of related problems that you might have as well. They're really great. I can't recommend the Advice Center enough. And I wish I knew about them as well in my undergrad years, because I don't know why I didn't, but yeah, they're so cool.
It's a learning process. And I think there is, the main point to make is that there is support there at university.
Kind of being sensible where you can be. So when you're doing your food shop, you think places like Sainsbury's and Tesco are actually quite cheap, but in reality, London prices are higher than outside of London. It can actually be quite an expensive weekly shop. So looking to see if they've got cheaper options like Aldi or Lidl nearby to you, or looking at maybe like online delivery service. That might be an easier way to kind of search for deals online if you have the time.
Definitely.
And looking at the kind of like reduced section in supermarkets, that saved my life. You can sometimes find like a trifle for 30p. It's not the healthiest dinner, but...
but it's a treat, you know, you may as well.
Trifle treat.
Yeah.
The reduced section is really good. And I suppose, like, you know, if you and your friends are looking to grab some drinks, like tons prices in the three tons. I feel like I'm advertising this to you. I'm actually trying not to, but
no, but there's good deals.
It's good deals. It's like probably some of the cheapest drinks you'll find in London.
That's just true.
Where I found I spent the most money that was kind of wasted was lunches. So
yeah,
coming to uni, especially
lunches,
if I was
catch
like
you out
unorganized, and you'd pop over to the co-op meal deal, and that would be like $3.50, just gone. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but if you're doing that like 3, 4, 5 times a week, that really adds up.
It does.
It's really expensive. So I would say it's such a pain. And if you're in the catered halls, it might be really tricky too. But trying to create lunches, like using leftovers, or you know, just packing like a salad or a sandwich.
Yeah, meal prep.
Save you a lot. Meal prep. And
that's a fancy
word. I calculate myself. I'm not really like that. I'm not practicing what I preach, but this is what we need to do, guys. This is going to be the year of meal prep. being sensible about what you eat and what you buy food-wise is really important. As you said, you've got a part-time job. I had a whole host of part-time jobs, actually. I worked at a vegan fast food place making burgers. Loved that. that's Temple of Satan, if anyone wants a quite well-paid job. They're very nice in there. I worked at an ice cream place. What else did I do? I did kind of like stint, which is this agency work, and we kind of just get shipped off to different places every time. Really weird, actually. I'm not sure if I recommend them. I'm sure you'll find a part-time job that works for you. You can get a job with the SU. We have student staff positions, and they pay the London Living Wage, which is awesome. And you probably won't get that in a lot of sort of bars.
And the London Living Wage is £10.50.
Yeah,
that is an important point to hammer home, everyone. London Living Wage is £10.50. That's not the minimum wage, but do your best to get a London Living Wage.
Look out for those, because they're we should be getting paid at least.
Yep.
And then I was going to say something else as well. Oh yeah, student Oyster cards, because the tube one way is £2.40, which it's quite expensive if you think. If you only go like two stops, that's quite expensive.
That is. Yeah.
I know I was saying earlier, get the tube home. Safe, but you know, if you're just like going to uni or like going in to go shopping or something, £2.40 is a lot. So they have a student Oyster discount. So have a look at getting that organized before you start as well.
TFL website, check it all out. And if you have a National Rail card,
you can link that
in. Get some cheap tickets, guys. Tickets are not even tickets anymore. That's embarrassing.
No, but that's a few tips I thought of. But all I can say is you're not going to get it right from the start. Like, you will overspend on certain things, you know, that, and like, it's really tricky because a lot of people do use student overdrafts, and they're kind of like, overdrafts are kind of very common, but you can kind of sink yourself into, you know, quite a lot of money on there if you're not careful. Like, I racked up, I think, £1,000 on my overdraft from first year, which probably isn't the highest, but it's definitely not good. And I stopped using it my second and third year, just worked more hours in my part-time job and was more sensible with my money. But now I'm finished and I have this £1,000 overdraft that I need to sort out. I'm not saying that to put people off overdrafts, because if you need them, you need them, and they are a good way of kind of having that safety net. I think that's really important, having those safety nets, because, you know, the majority of people can't just go to mum and dad and say, need some money, help me out, pay my rent for me. That's not people's realities in a lot of cases. So having to take your nets like part-time jobs and an overdraft, you know, not to put anyone off them, and knowing about the hardship fund is really important as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, yeah, be careful with overdrafts, be mindful, make sure you do your research. Yeah. They do roll over to like a graduate account, so you don't have to pay them off straight after you graduate. You usually get like a 3-year grace period where you slowly work off the debt.
Yeah.
But just be mindful and do your research. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and remember that you can get all the advice in the world if you don't know where to start or you're confused, because honestly, when it comes to financial talk, sometimes I get lost. I get so confused sometimes. You guys will be all right. You'll save money.
I promise you'll be all right. And you know, if things are tricky, just kind of, you know, chat to advice service if you need. You can always chat to me. I'm always here. Yeah.
You know, this is a very unprecedented, hate that word, but it is the only word that
the
suits
buzzword of 2020.
it is, who knew, but it is kind of the only word that suits this situation.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, you know, for students who are entering uni now, either for the first time or are returning, what can they do to deal with all of this new world, these new anxieties, along with everything else that was going on before and is going on in their lives now?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I think it's really important to say that I think students need to be really kind to themselves. Like the situation that they're facing and have to deal with is a huge one. And being a student anyway is so tough, and academic pressures at LSE are tough as it is, let alone dealing with everything that's coming their way with COVID. So yeah, firstly, be kind to yourself. I think that's really important to state. And I think the second thing is kind of knowing that there is support there should you need it as the year goes on. So hopefully that returning students will know about the student counselling service already. But for incoming students, basically it sits within LSE's student wellbeing service. And you can access counselling through the service. If you fill in the online form, you should hope to get back a response in 2 working days. So the turnaround for getting a response is definitely getting better. That's been like a big priority for a lot of students. I think they've had a lot of problems with the counselling service in the past, but things are definitely improving, and that's definitely one way to access support if you need it. You can talk through whatever problems you may be facing with a counsellor. If it's kind of more you're looking for tools to look after your mental health just generally through the year, the LSE has partnered with Mind for online workshops this year. So on the student wellbeing service website, there's a link to these workshops, and they cover all kinds of things, kind of like checklists or ways to kind of look after your mental health, things like mindfulness, meditation, all of these things run by Mind, which is obviously an amazing charity, and it's completely tailored to student experience. So that's a really great tool that everyone should know about. And also kind of like more of an academic consideration, LSE Life in the ground floor of the library. I wish I'd kind of known about it when I was an undergrad, because from my position, I've been kind of hearing from, so Claudine runs LSE Life, and she's an incredible woman. And they really are a very student-centered, focused part of LSE, which isn't the case, we can say, for a lot of LSE divisions. But I can say, like, hand on heart, LSE Life really do try to kind of create programs that will speak to every student experience. They've got great workshops and stuff throughout the year, so keep an eye on that as well, because
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I did go to them a few times in my first year. I don't know how I even heard about them. I think it was in the library tour, the introduction things they did. And yeah, they're really, really helpful when you need academic help. In terms of the Mind workshops, is that online? Is it all Zoom?
Yeah, all online. It's not really like sort of live workshops. It's more you kind of, they have the resources up on the website, and you can kind of tap into them as and when you want and kind of see what's relevant. So it's kind of like a self reflection and self like driven workshop. Kind of see what you need.
Yeah, that sounds really great. And obviously I've realized I just haven't asked you the most obvious question in the world, which is, obviously you're the sort of community I don't know, what's the word, representative? I never know what to call you guys because you're all so important, but I'm like, are they representatives? Are they
Who knows
president? I don't know.
the official job title is community and welfare officer. So we're sabbatical officers, we work full-time, we've all graduated. So I graduated this summer. David obviously was community and welfare officer last year, and he's now our wonderful GenSec. We've got Ellie, who graduated this summer as well. She's our activities and development officer, and then the lovely Bali, who was a master's student. So we're all working full time. We're there to represent you guys in every stage of LSE sort of discussions, in our priorities and our manifestos that we're kind of mandated to work on behalf of you guys. So that's kind of what we do, but really we're here to basically represent and look after you guys. So if there's something that we're not doing right, we want to hear from you what you want us to do. So
well, that makes it a lot clearer, I think. Because I didn't know, I knew there was like a general secretary, but I didn't really know any of the other roles, honestly, until about halfway through first year. So I think it's really good for people to learn about them early on, because like, you guys are really great. You're here to listen and you care and you know exactly what it's like.
Well, I hope that people know that. And that's also on us. We need to make sure that we're visible virtually and on campus for you guys as students, and that you know that our sort of door is always open. We're on the third floor in the Students' Union. Now, because of COVID, you can't kind of wander in, unfortunately, as you usually would be able to. But you can drop us an email anytime.
And then I've just thought of this question, so forgive me, it might be a bit of a weird one, but in terms of LSE community, because obviously that's in your title, there's so many stereotypes about the LSE community. I remember I would hear all of them and I felt sick. I was thinking, I'm not going to survive at this uni, what is going on? What would you say the LSE community is actually like?
That is the question, isn't it? You're sorry. Right in that we do have a particular image, not particularly a good one, that we're all sort of corporate drones that have no real community. all we care about is our corporate lives and internships, careers. I mean, there's an element of truth to that. You'll find people on campus who you know, very career driven and have got loads of internships in their belt, but that's not to say that that's not completely credible and valid way of navigating through LSE, but I'd also say that that's definitely not the reality for most of our students. I think kind of community looks different for everyone, but I do think that everyone kind of finds their like tribe, if it were, in some corner of LSE. So I think an amazing thing about our uni is how engaged people are with societies and sports. So
yeah,
I think the statistic is that the average student is a part of three clubs and societies.
Wow.
Which is like one of the highest in the UK, and it's really cool.
To be fair, I think that's true. Most of the people I know are in that many, but it doesn't even seem that stressful.
No, it's really. Just like, I think it just kind of goes to show that we're really active, that we kind of really value that sense of community that you can get from a club and society. I joined lacrosse in my first year, mixed lacrosse, even though I'd never played it before. I kind of got coaxed into it at the Freshers' Fair. And that was like one of the best decisions I made at LSE. Like, it was kind of a second family for me. I met so many new people, got to try a new sport. And then I ended up being club captain in my third year, which I just loved. I loved running it. I loved kind of looking after the first year.
That's so cool that you'd never even done it before.
Yeah, it was cool. I love my lacrosse family, so shout out to them, really recommend them. I think finding that those, whatever it may look like, it might be a society, it might be a sport, it might be the faith centre, it might be a campaign. There's loads of great campaigns at the moment within the SU. So I would just say that community can be what you want it to be, and you might have to work a tiny bit harder than maybe some campus unis outside of London to find that, but I think keep at it, and once you do, I think you'll feel like you've got that kind of second family that you need at uni.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I completely agree. I know that your plans as the community and wellbeing officer are obviously going to be different to last year's officers. You know, you'll continue a lot of the great work.
Yeah.
But I know you've said to me that you're quite interested in making like a culturally competent mental health service, well, changes to the current service at LSE. I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course, sure. I mean, firstly, I think, like, credit to my predecessors and previous students, I think we've made some amazing progress in mental health. So as I mentioned, David was in my position last year and he secured £1 million extra funding for mental health,
which
is incredible.
Yeah.
I think the Freedom of Mind group have done amazing work as well of pushing mental health up to the top of the agenda and creating some great conversations on campus about mental health. So I think we were making great strides. I think for me, kind of trying to zoom out and seeing whether these kind of progress and great steps are being felt equally across the student population.
Yeah.
And I think there is kind of a lot of work still to be done on that front. So I think looking at the Faith Centre, it's important that kind of all religions are represented equally, and that can be a potential area for people to seek support and guidance if they should choose to. So I think in particular, I think looking at having a chaplain service for Muslim students is really important. And looking at how we can kind of ensure cultural competency with people of faith as well. So that's one kind of aspect of it. I think another really key part is looking at how mental health experiences will differ for those who identify as LGBTQ+ as well. So obviously they can access the counselling service, but for a lot of people, if their counsellor isn't doesn't identify with the LGBTQ+ community, then there's that worry that they won't understand their experiences and they won't speak to those experiences. So that can be quite an isolating experience as it is already. If you feel like you've opened up to a counsellor and you're in need of support and you just feel like they're not understanding kind of what your life entails.
That when if you have to sit in a room and try and explain the basic sort of facts about your life to someone who just isn't quite getting it. That would be quite tiring, and it would just I think you'd give up on that journey.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge danger in that if people access it and they don't feel like they're being understood, then they might completely turn away from the service altogether, and like, you know, quite understandably. And I think that also speaks to the fact that we need more people of colour within the counselling service as well, specifically black counsellors. So that's another really important part of that. And hopefully the next term I'm going to be able to put together a sort of research project into that, looking at that, where we can hear from students, find those gaps in our support services, and look at how we can fill them for this year. I think it's such an important area of work.
Completely. That's right. It's just important, isn't it? It's like the fundamental kind of importance. And I really support you in doing that. And I'm sure a lot of students are going to really, really appreciate that. And we've spoken a lot in the series, rightly so, a lot, about kind of consent issues, sexual harassment, you know, the Hands Off LSE campaign, Hannah, who's started this whole initiative to really get sex education more in the mainstream at LSE for everyone. And I'm wondering, obviously, as the role you have now, well-being is a massive part of that. And I wonder, you know, I didn't really know a lot about the procedure at LSE to go through if something like that happens. In first year, I didn't actually go to a lot of freshers events. In fact, I went to none. I'm saying I didn't go to a lot. I didn't go to any. But when stuff like this does happen, you know, when things go wrong, things that you didn't want to happen, what is the actual procedure? What should you do? And in your opinion, what's going to be changed in that area?
Yeah. I think I'm glad you raised this because I think this is such a personal issue and very personal for me because I spent my final year of my undergrad campaigning for this with Ella from Hands Off, who started Hands Off. We put forward the motion to improve sexual assault support at LSE, and that's something I've been working on since then and will be throughout the year. So in terms of what does a procedure look like, unfortunately there isn't a clear path for students. Now that's not to say there aren't avenues that they can explore, and obviously a survivor can like seek support in whichever way they choose to. Sources of support that you can access through LSE are the Safe Contact system. I think there's around 40 Safe Contacts now, and you can find them if you just search Safe Contacts in the LSE search bar. You can find them there. There are loads of different people from across departments. They're all volunteers, but they all have had training, specialist training in sort of disclosures and specifically for sexual violence.
Are they like members of staff?
Yeah, so they're like members of staff from departments. There's Bing Cheng, who is the sort of specifically for women students as well. But there, you can go to anyone that you choose to. If you can have a look at their kind of mini profiles and see, you know, who do I feel most comfortable approaching on this? Mm. And what they can do is kind of help you navigate like the monolith that is LSE. So they can talk you through sort of reporting to the police if that's something you choose. They can talk you through accessing Rape Crisis, have a support worker that comes in once a month, and you can have up to 3 sessions with that support worker, so they can arrange that for you. They can help you arrange counselling with the student counselling service. They can help with things like if you need a letter to explain why you want a extension or why you might want exceptional circumstances. They can do a lot of things basically, and they'll be able to talk you through all those in a really safe, survivor-led, trauma-informed way, which is so important. So that's definitely one avenue. There are also lots of sort of external specialists like the Havens, Rape Crisis. There are a lot of external sources of support as well.
Does this, all this help and support apply if this has happened outside of uni as well, to do with, you know, a situation that didn't even take place near campus, on campus, to do with uni at all? Is it, you know, does it work both ways in terms
yeah, absolutely. And you know, firstly, as you said, this is absolutely not your fault. This is something that's happened to you, and all the sources of support that I mentioned are completely open and accessible for you. It doesn't matter if it's an LSE student or not, if it was, you know, a week ago or 3 years ago, it doesn't matter. You're completely allowed to want to get support, and you should get that support. So yeah, all of those that I mentioned are accessible for anyone.
Yeah, and I guess it's that thing you said earlier about the sort of student counselling services. These people will also hopefully, and I'm assuming will, have enough knowledge of the world to know that things don't just happen in this sort of very binary world. They will know that these issues affect everyone, and they're there to support you no matter who you are.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that being said, that means that those sources of support exist, but the kind of campaign and lobbying work that we've been doing and I will continue to be doing is kind of based on the fact that I feel like that's not enough support, and I feel like it could be improved. So one of the models that we're really pushing for is the sexual violence liaison officer model, and it's where you have a full-time member of staff sitting within EDI, which is the Equalities, Diversity and Inclusion division, and they're explicitly there as someone who you can just make the single disclosure to. So rather than having to be forced to disclose it to maybe like an academic mentor and then a counsellor, or I don't know, like your halls warden, that you can just disclose it to this one person, this sexual violence liaison officer, who's it's their full-time job to deal with these disclosures. And then they can help you navigate all of the areas that you might need to navigate through LSE. And that's something that we're really pushing for this year, and we are making good progress towards that, but there's definitely still a ways to go till we see that person being hired and in place. And as another part of that is the fact that we have Rape Crisis as a sort of external support for students, but we don't have one that specifically speaks to male survivors. So we're looking at trying to secure support for that. There are charities that specifically provide support for survivors who identify as male, like Survivors UK. Looking at getting that in place this year as well.
Yeah, because I think that is really important, because, you know, obviously I think this stuff does happen more frequently to people who identify as women, and it is, you know, you can make it very sort of black and white in those terms, but it does happen to boys as well. And I feel, you know, sometimes I wonder, God, how do you navigate that? Because we've not created a kind of a place that would even question that boy that could happen to boys almost.
Yeah,
you know, I really would want anyone who has had that experience, no matter who they are, to know that it's not their fault. Do you know?
Yeah, and male survivors face that sort of additional taboo. I mean, sexual assault and harassment has so much stigma attached to it, an unhealthy amount. Like, obviously mental health does too, but I feel like we're in a better space about talking about it among peers. But I mean, even myself, and I've did a UDM, I've done a lot of campaigning on this, you know, I still find it hard to talk about it, especially within certain circles. So you know, I think there's that added taboo for male survivors when that's combined with sort of like toxic masculinity and you know, that system where, you know, males are kind of shunned for being vulnerable and for opening up. So yeah, it's so important that we get specific support in place as well.
And then obviously I'm wondering, just because you've mentioned now you've been doing this work, the Hands Off LSE, you know, you did that whole campaign and continue to work really closely with that. In terms of the culture at LSE and creating hopefully a place where this stuff actually doesn't really happen anymore, and students are well versed in knowing how to combat this stuff when it does arrive, what do you think, just students on the whole, the student body can do to really, if they notice something like this happen, or can maybe feel that a situation isn't right and they're concerned, what do you think are sort of like your guiding words on how to navigate that? I know that's a really big question and I would struggle so much to answer that, but I just feel as though so often when you're in these situations, you don't realise what's happening until it's happened.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that is how will happen before university. I think what we really need to see is sort of consent and sexual education starting a lot younger, and sort of teaching girls that they have the autonomy that they do. I think looking back at my education, I certainly didn't have anything at school that was kind of focused on sort of consent or autonomy or spotting toxic behavior, because such sad fact about this is it's more likely to be the perpetrator is more likely to be someone that you know. So having this sort of education about spotting toxic behaviors and consent and autonomy, I think, is so important, and this needs to happen a lot younger, so that when people do come to university, they already are equipped with that knowledge that will help them in these kind of situations, and that also goes for educations for, you know, young boys as well. You need to teach them about respecting women and consent as well. You know, this isn't just teaching girls not to be harassed or experience sexual violence. This is about teaching boys not to do those things too. So, you know, hopefully we can kind of see those moves in earlier years as well. But at university, I think continuing consent education is really important, and creating spaces where you don't tolerate behaviour that's predatory or misogynistic or you know, toxic. I think we all have a responsibility to play in that, and being active bystanders if we have that capacity as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think a further point I'd make is that I think it's quite important for people to constantly question their own actions. You know, I know that sounds really tiring, but genuinely, I think it goes a long way to think, why did I do that? Why do I feel as though I can do that? You know, what is my power dynamic with this person? And I'm not saying that as a point where you'll end up ruining all your like relationships and friendships because you're constantly thinking, God, am I the person in power here? I don't mean like that. But I mean, I think that there's a thing of this stuff doesn't get spoken about in terms of what should you do if this happens, because I don't think, I don't know, maybe universities or even LSE itself, they're worried about bringing it up and people thinking that this is something to expect. And it isn't something to expect, obviously.
I mean, it's not something to expect, but prevalence of it is absolutely disturbing. I think some universities have had surveys where 90% of students, female students, have said that they've been either harassed or groped on a university night out, which is just like it's so pervasive and it's just so disturbing. So it's not something to be expected, but I think what I really struggle with, I think the issue that we have with universities and LSE in particular, is that they find it far easier to talk about consent rather than sexual violence and harassment, because the latter means accepting that you have perpetrators in your campus and in your corridors, rather than consent, which is talking about sort of preemptive measures. So I think both are equally important, and you know, you can't have one without the other as your sort of policy approach. But yeah, I think that's a real issue there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's worth acknowledging that if you think something weird has happened, but you're not sure because they seem like a nice person and all of that, you have to trust your instinct with these things, that you really do. And it's,
and I think, you know, just as something to add into that section, when we were talking about kind of procedure and stuff, like, I can only stress that only do what you feel comfortable with, and hopefully you can find someone who you trust that can kind of help you and support you in this process, because it is such an isolating and scary experience. But finding someone that you can really trust, confide in, to help those kind of things is really important. And never feel like you have to explore kind of one source of support if that doesn't feel right to you. It really kind of is, you know, is up to you and what you feel comfortable doing.
Yeah, no, thank you. Honestly, that is such such important and good information for people to have. And I really think that people will listen and learn and think. And yeah, no, that's just great. It's so good that we have someone like you on campus who's actually can push some change and knows all about everything. And yeah, there's all the support in the world for you. And if you have a bad experience going to someone about something, please don't let that put you off. Find someone else to go to, because there are people who really, really care. And the majority of people, hands down, do care.
I know this year probably isn't how you expected it to be, but I think I've already seen how creative people are being about dealing with this and still being sociable. And, you know, if you're ever feeling isolated, you know, reach out to the support networks, like the Wellbeing Service or the SU. We are here for you guys. Still being connected in a COVID world, as horrible as it sounds. So, you know, enjoy the year. It's going to go so fast, I promise you. Don't worry too much about your studies. I mean, work hard, but not too hard. I always say my best piece of advice, and I wish I'd done this more, was invest as much time in your sort of self-care and own well-being as you do in your sort of studies and your career commitments. Putting that self-care in is so important. Getting enough sleep, eating properly, and everything else will be far easier to deal with. So don't let those slip. Good luck. You'll have a really fab year. Always here.
Thank you. I feel like I'm ready to go now. No, honestly, Laura, thank you so much. Thank you to Laura Goddard, the Community and Wellbeing Officer at the SU. The music is by Anybody, spelt with two Y's, which you can find on Spotify. This episode of Starter Pack was brought to you by Maisie Adair. You can follow the series by going to Beaver Sounds at Spotify.